The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, uupinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is a great favorite of ours, Jay Jacobs, chair of the New York State Democratic Committee. You can find out more at New York Dems. That's nydems.org. Welcome, Jay.
Well, thanks for having me again.
Okay, so, Jay, it's always fun to talk to you because you always tell us the truth as you see it. I remember talking to you about Andrew Cuomo, and you were pretty straightforward about what ought to happen there, which was it was time for Cuomo to sort of step aside. Am I misstating the case?
No, I mean, you stated it accurately.
Okay. With the nomination now in hand after the Democratic convention, Governor Kathy Hochul seems poised to become the first elected female governor of New York. You were an early endorser of hers. Give us your report card on her work so far.
I think she's done a great job. It's not an easy job, governor of the state of New York, but yet she undertook it and just created a strong position for herself in so many different areas. I remember when she took the office, she was hit by heavy storms here in the New York area and handled that. We had the uptick in COVID, and she's dealt with that. And some of the things that she's had to do have not been universally popular, but she's stuck to the science and stuck to doing what she believes and experts believes will help, end the pandemic sooner rather than later. And that seems to have worked. And then, she came up with a budget that was, I think everybody said universally, was excellent. And she started a whole new collaborative approach, both with the legislature and the mayor of the city of New York, that I think is bearing fruit. So I think overall she's doing a really excellent job.
Isn't part of her success that she's not Andrew Cuomo?
Well, somebody coming in new always has a honeymoon period, and I think that she certainly benefited from one, as she should. But nonetheless, I think that, she's demonstrated her own leadership style, and I think people like it.
Some people come up to me in the street and say, oh, come on, Cuomo's going to run again, and I'm going to vote for him. Is there any chance of that? Not me, not Alan.
Yeah. Look, there are loyal folks, and there are people who think that, he didn't get a fair deal, and he certainly doesn't think he did. But, as I said, there's a saying in the Army, no man is bigger than the mission. And I think that applies here. Yeah, we're the Democratic Party. We're about taking care of people, taking care of the issues of the state of New York. We're not about any one person, any one candidate. When it becomes that, then it becomes a personality cult. The Republicans are doing well enough on their end with a personality cult. We don't need it here. As much as you may like the former governor and admire what he's done, and that's fair and reasonable. But the fact of the matter is we have a governor, we have to move forward, and we've got to take care of these issues, and that's where my focus is.
Now, Jay Jacobs, you are the chair of the New York State Democratic Committee. My question is, what does the Democratic Committee do?
Well, we organize a lot of the politics and election infrastructure around the state. So we're dealing with the voter file and targeting of, who to contact to persuade voters to get out the vote. All of those kinds of things, those logistics, come through the state party. The state party is the parent organization also for the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee and the Democratic Assembly Campaign Committee. So those entities technically go under the auspices of the state party. But we raise funds for campaigns, for candidates. We're generally candidate-focused based upon requests from county chairs and the like. And we help with the housekeeping or the infrastructure for our various 62 counties, county committees.
So I see you're still the chair of the Democratic Committee. I say that because usually the top office holder, the president or the governor, chooses such a person. But you must be doing something right because you're still alive.
Well, either that or they just can't find anybody else.
You know that's not true.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. You know, it's a difficult job. I enjoy it. I love the people. I love, you know, dealing with my county fellow county chairs. I just enjoy them personally. And it is engaging. And, I like dealing with the governor and the team and Carl Hastie and Andrea Stewart-Cousins. I like all of that. But it is, you know, it is a delicate job. You can get into trouble in more ways than you can imagine. Very easily, and I've done that occasionally, but I do the best I can.
Will you remind us of the last time you got in trouble?
Remind you of the last time?
Yes.
Well, why would I want to? What sensible politician would want to bring up anything like that? I think I'll leave it to the historians to work on that, if they have any interest.
So there is going to be a primary. There are some people coming in the primary. Hochul seems to be, according to the polls, way ahead. And yet there's a surprising number of people who say they haven't made up their mind yet. What do you make of that?
Well, that's normal. I mean, people just don't pay attention the way we would think they should because, you know, they're leading, you know, their own lives. And, it's not everything we think is important and maybe important to us is important to everybody else. They're, you know, more focused on, you know, making ends meet at times and making sure their children are safe and going off to good schools. And those are the things that most people look at. So they're just not up to speed on it. But as people begin to focus and pay more and more attention to it and more ads are up on TV for this gubernatorial race, Kathy Hochul will get stronger and stronger.
You are a discerning, bright person. You got to sleep at night and you have nightmares like the rest of us or good dreams. And if I had to ask you, which of the present political office holders in New York would you think may have a tough time getting reelected or solidifying their base? I know I have mine, which would be Senator Gillibrand, but I don't know whether you would agree with that.
Well, you know, everything is about, what's going to happen in the future. And that's tough to figure out. I like Kirsten Gillibrand a lot. I know her very well. I would have to say that, you know, her election is not this year, so she's got time.
Yeah.
But she's going to have to, you know, make sure that she's, you know, being as visible as can be around the various parts of the state. And I think she'll be fine if she does that. But, these elections, given that New York is overwhelmingly, by registration, a Democratic state, and it certainly leans heavily Democratic, that doesn't mean Republicans can't win. They can.
No.
And it has a lot to do with the environment, what's going on at the time. So inflation right now is a big item. Public safety is a big item. And these are things that Democratic candidates, no matter who you are and what office you're running for, are going to have to demonstrate to voters that they've got a good handle on and some answers for. Inflation, unfortunately, is not a problem caused by any Democrat, not the president, not anybody. We'd have the same inflation rate had Donald Trump won re-election. There's not much you could do about it. It's all off of COVID and a lot of the supply chain issues. And now you've, of course, got the energy issues related to particularly things like what's going on in the Ukraine and Russia, the third largest oil producing country in the world. So, that's going to be, but we have to make sure that voters understand that and see the other benefits of the economy. 6.6 million jobs created, 5.7% GDP growth, the highest in years. So I would just have to say that we have to make a better case of it, and our candidates should do okay.
My next question is, as we speak today, the news is upon us that there's some consideration among Republicans of hauling George Pataki back into the race for governor. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that's, what that's all about is that Republicans realize that a guy like Lee Zeldin, who is such a radical, Trump sycophant, guy who voted against certifying Biden's election, that's not something that's going to sell in New York. I don't care what the Democrats are saying or what you say about the Democrats. That kind of an approach just doesn't sell. Alabama will do well, for Lee Zeldin, but not not a state like New York. And they see that as a problem. So this guy's got real problems. So they're trying to scrap and search for anybody else. I see Wilson's entered the race now, and he's talking about putting $12 million of his own money in. And, you know, I understand that that's been pushed by folks who just don't believe that Langworthy's, you know, handpicked candidate for governor is just going to be able to win the November election. I don't think he can.
Now, Tom Suozzi, who's a favorite of many people, says that Hillary told him not to run as he was launching his campaign for governor of New York. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton called Representative Tom Suozzi the message, please don't run for governor, stay in Congress. Suozzi ignored the advice. What's with Suozzi? I suspect he knows he's not going to win this thing. Why would he? You know them all. You know their character. Why would he be in?
Well, Tom is a good friend of mine. I mean, like I was his campaign chair each time that he ran for county executive. I've been with him and close with him and his family. So, you know, this is beyond politics, and I feel very badly about it. And, of course, I'm on the opposite side of his now. And it's not that I'm against Tom. It's just I'm for Kathy Hochul. You know, I think she's done a great job. And, frankly, she's in the same lane as Tom. She's a moderate progressive. He's a moderate and progressive. So, you know, I just don't see the need for it on a political sense, on top of which, as I say, she is the incumbent. I told him early on I did not think he should run. I was very much against this run. I gave him solid reasons why not to run. Hillary Clinton isn't the only formerly elected official or elected official on the Democratic side to ask him not to run. Everybody else has as well. There isn't a single soul I know that's an elected official of consequence that has said that they think this is a good idea. And I've said to him, you know, you're running as a common sense Democrat. If you had any common sense, you'd be running for Congress. You wouldn't run for governor because we need him in Congress. He's on the Ways and Means Committee, one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful committees, I guess, aside from rules in the House of Representatives. He's close to leadership. He's really gotten a strong position there. New York needs that. And I need it in the 3rd Congressional District, which happens to be mine, here on Long Island. And now it extends all the way up into Westchester. And Tom could win that. It's a very strong Democratic district. And yet he is leaving it. And I just don't think that's a good judgment on his part. And frankly, I just don't see, you know, I see his TV ads. I see what his messaging is. Kathy Hochul is as good as he is on all of these issues. He can try to frame it any which way he wants. But you'll see as time goes on and the budget gets passed and the rest, that a lot of the things that Tom is talking about, but Kathy is working on, you know, will get done under her leadership. And so I just don't see it. He told us he wasn't going to run for governor unless he got the SALT deduction back, the state and local tax deduction that was taken away under Trump from New York and other states like it. It didn't happen. I mean, he got it passed in the House, but that doesn't give us the SALT deduction back. You got to get it done. So, you know, I'd like him to go and focus on that. And I feel very badly that he's making this run.
Let's talk a little bit, if we can, Jay Jacobs, the chair of the Democratic Party in New York State, in case you're just joining us, about redistricting. Is this hypocritical by the Democrats saying, okay, we're going to change the chess pieces around so that only we Democrats can win?
Well, you know, again, I don't, you know, I'm not here to buy that narrative that that is what happened. But I will say this. I hear the complaints of Republicans. And, of course, there are Democrats complaining in Republican states for exactly the same thing.
Two wrongs make a right.
Well, in this case, what I always say, again, I had nothing to do with the redistricting, so I really, you know, I have no say in it. But I will tell you that I would never say that, you know, unilateral disarmament is a smart thing. We gave the Republicans the opportunity to pass a voting rights bill in the House and the Senate. The House it's passed, so it was the Senate of the United States, that would have ensured that redistricting was done nationwide, not just in New York State, but nationwide, in a way that everybody would find bipartisan and beyond, you know, question. They chose not to bring it up. They filibustered it so that it would never come up. So now you can't do that and then complain with the rules in place being used at this time. That's just silliness. So you want to fix it? We wanted to fix it. We would have fixed it. You didn't want to fix it. So now don't complain about it.
let's talk a little bit, if we can, about bail reform. Now, on that one, which was making it, you know, difficult for judges to have their say, according to the critics of bail reform. And so a lot of people didn't like it, and the Democrats seemed to lose some traction as a result of it. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that the narrative that the Republicans used very well to their advantage was that bail reform is a reason for the increase in crime. And they would point to particular examples of crimes that were committed and associate it with bail reform. The truth is, I mean, and this is the problem, is we're not working in an environment where there's truth. The concept of bail reform is something, if you could explain it to people and they'd listen, they would agree with it, almost overwhelmingly. I think that people understand that, you know, it's not about being soft on crime, it's about being smart on crime. And there are a lot of nonviolent, I'll underscore that, nonviolent crimes that people are accused of, that if you've got money, you place bail, you're out before nightfall. But if you don't, and there are lots of people who don't, commit the exact same crime. You sit in prison sometimes for years, I mean years, before you come to trial. And that's just not fair and it's not right, and I don't think anybody would argue for that. What's happened here, however, is that there are issues in the bail reform bill which take nonviolent crimes that may have been committed by someone who has a history of having committed violent crimes, and the judges may not have the discretion to impose bail on that incident because the crime itself was nonviolent and falls under a certain category. So there's a little bit of a cleanup, if you will, that some folks like Mayor Adams are looking at and have been talking about, which would correct it. But the main thing I want to stress on this call is that most people, and even in the press and elected folks, frankly, that were involved in passing it, don't seem to be talking in ways that express the reality of what law, what crimes were included under this bail reform. It's very, and it's not the case. And the Daily News had a headline just a day or two ago, which established that poor lady that was stabbed 40 times by somebody who got out of jail, you know, was in jail 9 different times. And, you know, everybody claimed, oh, see, bail reform, look what it did. That had absolutely nothing to do with bail reform. If that law didn't exist, this still would have happened. So I'm just saying that we've got to deal with crime. And we've got to deal with public safety. We've got to deal with it in an effective way. If the outcome is making our streets safe and our people safer in their homes and in the subways and elsewhere around our cities and all of our communities, then let's be serious about it and stop the campaign rhetoric, which does not go along with, you know, the outcome we really want. And that's the problem we're in because, you know, it's a headline kind of a world when you campaign. Nobody's reading the content.
So, Democratic Chair Jay Jacobs in New York, talk to me a little bit about term limits. I know we've talked about them before, but I want to make sure that I understand. You think we should not have term limits, or do I have that wrong?
Well, I mean, the governor's position is that statewide officials should have term limits so that a governor, someone could be a governor, let's say, for 2 terms. And but they don't have them for the Senate and the Assembly. My view has always been a little bit skeptical. I like the fact that the President of the United States, for instance, is limited to 2 terms. So I do like that. I worry sometimes when it comes to these legislative roles, because when you begin to limit the number of years in a legislative role that you're in, all of a sudden the bureaucrats tend to be the ones who have all the information and institutional knowledge, and that shifts power to people who are unelected. That's been my view of it. But I understand what the governor is doing, and I support it, and we'll see where we go.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about COVID, the idea that people may not want to wear masks. They didn't want their kids to wear masks. They pressure the government to take away those insistences that they continue to wear masks. What do you make of it all?
Well, you know, the whole thing's been politicized, but also I think that everybody's got to just take a step back. You know, we went through an awful lot, and it was difficult. And not every decision that was made, I'm sure, was exactly right, but people were operating with the best information they had at the time. I remember us all, you know, wiping those Amazon packages down before you dared open them or what have you back in the day. So a lot of things, you know, maybe not 100% right, but again, you're doing the best you can with the information you have. Let's look at it this way. Number one, people in recent times have had to live through a lot worse. I think of, you know, if you lived through World War II with rationing and all of those kinds of things. Look, we had gas rationing back in the 70s here, where you couldn't get gasoline for your car just when you wanted to. You had to go on the days that, you know, corresponded to your license plate number, if I remember correctly. And in World War II, if you were in a London, boy, you know, it wasn't pleasant at times. People had to give a lot when there were crises. Nowadays, people don't want to sacrifice anything. No matter what the issue is, sacrifice is just not my problem. It's somebody else's. And I think that's not what this nation is about. This nation is about a community taking care of each other. And it goes to the question, okay, so you don't want to wear a mask. Fair. What's the value of somebody's life? What's the value of somebody's grandparent?
Sure.
You know, maybe there's no value to you, but there's value to them. And if we can keep the virus from spreading,
sure,
and ending up with somebody's grandparent, well, that's a good thing. So, you know, you don't want, you know, masks in schools. I understand that. Look, I run summer camps. I don't like the idea of kids walking around with masks. But the bottom line is, if keeping kids in masks cuts the rate that we spread COVID, and that means that going home, a child going home, because a child's not going to get that sick from COVID, but you know what? They may bring it to their home, and maybe they go visit their grandparents,
sure,
and their grandma or their granddad dies because, you know, they got it. Well, you know something, in my judgment, then that's called sacrifice. That's what we do for each other. That's a person who looks out for somebody else. It's not for me. It's not that we're worried that a kid's going to get COVID in school and come down with some, wouldn't be normal, or the average come down with some disease that put them in the hospital. But where are they going to spread it? And we're just trying to get through this thing and get people, you know, back to normal. I can understand. I don't agree. I can understand someone being nervous and not wanting their child or themselves even to be vaccinated. I can understand that. I disagree with it, but I can comprehend it. I'm having a tough time comprehending the minimal discomfort and inconvenience, though I don't like it either, of wearing a mask to protect other people. I mean, I'm sorry. That's just what I always thought humanity was about. And forget the politics. You know, that's just what this is about. Let's not make it more than it is.
I'm with you, Jay Jacobs. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about marijuana. The legislature passes a bill. They say we're going to have it. Now, I live in the good state of Massachusetts, right across the line. The New York license plates that are flowing into Great Barrington are huge numbers. And we're getting all that money. What's going on?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I think, you know, we should get moving here. I think that the governor just signed legislation or an executive order, I don't know what it was, to get it moving here in New York State. And I think we should. Frankly, the longer I'm in this job, the more interested I am in having access to marijuana. I got to tell you, you need something. But the bottom line of it is, I just think that, you know, we'll get it going. We want to do it right. We want to be mindful of what individual communities' concerns are. We want to have the right protections in. But, you know, it's time has come, and we're getting there.
With the Supreme Court likely to deal with the abortion issue, has New York done its job, full job, protecting women just in case?
Yes. I think in New York, we're in good shape. I think around the country, there are certainly states, and we know where they are, that have issues. I would say this. If the Supreme Court cuts back the protections provided in Roe v. Wade or does away with them, it's going to be a very different election year in November, because I'm telling you, particularly in a state like New York, there are going to be a lot of people you know, really motivated to get out and vote and send a message to that Supreme Court and the Republicans that back that viewpoint.
I want to thank you, of course, Jay Jacobs, for coming on with us and giving us your views in a straightforward manner. So I just want to ask you about this. Open government, the concept of open government. Now, journalists routinely wait months, if not years, for politicians and public agencies to respond to their FOIL requests. How do we shed light? How do we fix this? And you only got 2 minutes to answer.
Okay. Well, I mean, I believe in open government, too. But, you know, the difficulty you have is in this. You have to balance the desire for open government with the need, and it is a need, to have an executive, for instance, have access to open and free discussion about issues and to have all sides to look at. So what happens is this. If you're concerned that the email that you send talking to the governor about a policy issue is going to end up being foiled and in the newspaper in the next several weeks, you're not going to send it. And everything's going to be done on telephone calls and there'll be nothing in text or paper. So, you know, there's just got to be a balancing act because you can't have every discussion about every issue honestly held in the public sphere. Otherwise, people just won't say what's on their mind. And you can imagine circumstances like that. And but I think that the concept being that, you know, you should know campaign finance issues and all of those things, of course, there should be transparency so that people understand that decisions are being made at least in their best interest, not in somebody's financial best interest.
We've been listening to Jay Jacobs, chair of the New York State Democratic Committee. You can find out more about Jay and about the New York State Democratic Committee at newyorkdems.org. newyorkdems.org. Jay Jacobs, I really thank you for being with us. It's always great to hear you. And the thing I love about your responses are you don't fool around. You say what you think. And that's really terrific. Again, Jay Jacobs, thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me. Thank you.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Or visit us online anytime at WAMC.org, or you can even schedule a podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another Political Conversation with Alan Chartok. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.